This episode of the Commerce Marketer Podcast is brought to you by Bronto Software, the leading email provider to the global internet retailer 1000. For more ideas on how to improve your marketing automation and to take your email to the next level, visit www.bronto.com/resources. When consumers are looking to make a purchase, factors such as product, price, convenience, they all create transactional relationships between brands and consumers. If you want proof, look no further than Amazon. But when consumers have an emotional connection to a retailer, they have a 3 times higher lifetime value, 2.5 times higher annual spend, 1.5 times longer brand tenure, and a higher likelihood to recommend that brand. So how the heck does a retailer build that emotional connection with consumers? The answer is it's not easy. Welcome to the Commerce Marketer Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Zakowitz, and today's episode, I am joined by Smile.io's co-founder, Steve Deckard, to talk about strategies to make the purchase experience more of a conversation and less of a transaction. We'll talk about driving customer acquisition and building brand community through experiences, key elements of a modern-day rewards program, how customer service plays a role, and maybe an example or two of brands that actually get it. Plus, if you're traveling to Kitchener, Ontario anytime soon and want to know Steve's favorite restaurant in Kitchener, stay tuned. Without further ado, welcome to the show, Steve Deckard. Steve, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Greg. It's always great to work with Bronto on content. You folks have some amazing stuff that you're putting out, and this is another thing that's awesome.
Awesome. Appreciate the plug. That's always nice too. Steve, before we talk about retailer emotional connections, let's build one ourselves. So can you quickly give the audience a little background about who Smile is and what you do and what your kind of ideal customer looks like?
Yeah. So at Smile, we help businesses create connections with their customers, and we want those connections to be emotional. And using these emotional connections, we can create a community of emotionally connected customers that are loyal, that come back, that shop with us. And the way that we do that at Smile is with a loyalty, rewards, VIP, and referral platform that allows retailers to do that. We currently have over 25,000 online retailers using our platform to build those emotional connections with their customers. I work at Smile. I'm currently heading up our partnership team. I get to work with awesome technologies, like Bronto and others in conjunction with Smile.io.
Awesome, man. Appreciate that background. So I alluded to it in the intro. We were talking about transactional relationships versus emotional ones. Obviously, you guys are built on building that emotional relationship between brand and consumer. Let's kind of take a step back and say, let's focus on those transactional relationships. So can you provide the audience some examples of what transactional relationships are, and then we'll kind of get into that navigation of transactional moving toward the emotional side. So what are some of those examples of transactional relationships?
Yeah, so a transactional relationship, these relationships are really founded on three pillars. One is price, and specifically low prices. Second is convenience, so the ability to easily order, easily get your products, all of the ease of ordering. And then the third is a selection, what products are available and what maybe width of products are available. All of these kind of make up the table stakes of e-commerce and commerce and retail in general. And so if you are doing all of the things that are meeting the table stakes and meeting customers' expectations of any given brand, then you are essentially fulfilling their transactional requirements. And the problem is that a lot of retailers stop there. They stop investing in anything beyond just transactional relationships, which again are founded on low prices, wide selection, and convenience of ordering and receiving goods. And so when we look at a transactional relationship, the most basic transactional relationship that a lot of people have probably engaged with is actually a vending machine. So if you need a chocolate bar, or you're really hungry, you want a quick snack, you're going to go to the closest, the most convenient vending machine. And if there are two vending machines that are equally distant, then you're going to go to the one that has the lowest price or the one that has the widest selection of products. You will never return to a vending machine because you liked that vending machine. You have a transactional relationship with that vending machine and with that purchase. There are certain products that will be a transactional type purchase. So, toilet paper might be one where people may not want to, invest a lot in building emotional connections with their customers that are purchasing toilet paper from them. So there are those kind of transactional type of products, but most retailers don't fall within that transactional category. And they sell goods that usually consumers' discretional income, because we're asking them to buy something that they don't necessarily need. And so another transactional powerhouse, the world's best vending machine, in my opinion, is actually Amazon. They have mastered having a wide selection of products, having very low prices and driving prices down in a lot of cases, and making it very convenient to order and reorder and return goods and receive goods. Everything involved with fulfillment has been mastered by Amazon. And you know, they own that category of transactional relationships to the point where they now command over 50% of online retail sales. So those are all transactional relationships. And we're seeing a lot of retailers over-invest in building transactional relationships and not going the distance and investing in creating beyond transactional relationships, which are emotional relationships with their customers.
I've got to tell you, Steve, I do have an emotional connection to a vending machine. My kids go to swim class on the weekends, and there is a vending machine in the lobby. And every now and then, I let them get a snack. So they bring in their dollar, their 75 cents. And the thing always steals money from me. So I'm emotionally upset with this machine rather than pleased. And just last weekend, I'm like, okay, you can get something again. They put in 75 cents, a bag gets stuck. So they put another 75, same thing. The bag falls forward and catches on the glass and the other bag's behind it. So I put in another 75 cents to the bag above that one. And that fell and actually landed there. So whoever bought the next bag is going to get four bags of something. So I think it is possible to have an emotional connection with a vending machine, but probably not a good one. It's more of the negative side than anything. Just wanted to throw that out there. Maybe I'm venting. I don't know.
That brings up a really good point. Although it's not with fond memories, you still remember that vending machine. And people are more connected to things that they have emotional connections to. You probably don't remember any other vending machine other than that one. And that shows the value of emotional connections. It also shows the danger, right? If you're creating negative emotional connections, then you know they will still remember you, but for the wrong reason.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yes, I do not remember any other vending machine in my life. So that is true. So let's go back to the Amazon point real quick. So Amazon, they're obviously the powerhouse, right? You get emails from Amazon. They're not warm and friendly like I advise people to do. And they're just, hey, this is a product. Here's what we offer. Buy the thing and move on to the next widget. They're good at what they do, and they've taken a long time to build out what they do. So what's the counter argument to then saying, well, if they do it and it works for them, why shouldn't I do the same thing? What would your counter argument to that be?
Yeah. So, I mean, if the question is, if you want to play that game, do you think you can beat Amazon at that game? Do you think you can beat the world's powerhouse at building transactional relationships upon those three pillars? You know, my argument would be no, you can't, unless you know someone from Walmart or one of those large retailers is listening to this podcast. I don't think most retailers can compete with them based on those three pillars and based on transactional relationships. It's an uphill battle, and so if you know that you can't win that game, you need to decide to play another game that Amazon can't win.
One day, and this is probably at the beginning stages of the internet, but one day that is kind of how every business kind of operated for more or less. And then over time, as Amazon got more powerful and executed more flawlessly at this exact model, it's less effective for other retailers, especially smaller ones, like you just said, to compete with them. This obviously challenges retailers to rethink or adapt to how they approach customers. So we think about customer loyalty nowadays. With millennials, you saw less customer loyalty. They would trade down for brand name versus maybe generic based on the value and cost. And Gen Z, we're seeing that even more so. So we have this challenge with customer loyalty nowadays. You know, so for these retailers, it's really important to start building this emotional connection. What are some ways that a retailer can start to build this emotional relationship between consumers and brand? Because as I mentioned before, and you mentioned earlier, it's not an easy thing to do. So what are some ways foundational ways retailers can start looking at this and saying, all right, this is what we need to do first, second, and third, and go from there?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is going to sound counterintuitive, but you need to make sure that you at least meet the table stakes of customer experience. So you do need to make sure that you are checking all of the transactional relationship boxes and then building on top of that. So if you have a glaring hole in your ability to deliver a product, it will be very difficult for you to create an emotional connection. If you're the vending machine whose chips get stuck, it's going to be very difficult for you to have an emotional connection that's positive with customers because you're not meeting those table stakes of those expectations. So, you know, at the groundwork, you need to have all of that covered. After you have those bases covered, that's when we start to get creative and thinking about, okay, how can we elevate the customer experience? That's really what we're trying to do, is we're actually trying to create an experience. An experience is the difference between my expectations and reality. So if I expect a certain table stakes and you don't meet them, that's a negative experience. If I expect table stakes and you over-deliver, so you meet all of my expectations for table stakes and then you give me something above and beyond that, that is an emotional experience. That is a positive emotional experience. And so, you know, first we need to make sure we have that base of table stakes covered. Then we can start looking at going above and beyond. And there are so many ways that we can create emotional connections with customers by maybe doing surprise and delight campaigns with them, by randomly rewarding them with something or throwing something nice in their order. Packaging is a huge opportunity here, especially for online retailers, where they can elevate the customer unboxing experience, which is usually the height of that customer's excitement, right? So let's capture that and let's elevate their experience by including some other things inside there. Maybe a handwritten note from someone who packed their order. Maybe just a really cool unboxing experience and investing in that experience as well. There are things that we can do a lot with associating our brand with causes and with maybe political causes or environmental causes or anything that I as a consumer associate my identity with, and trying to align the brand's identity with my personal identity. That's another way that you can do it. Certainly loyalty and reward programs are other ways that you can do this, where you are rewarding customers for their actions and then they can spend loyalty points on a reward of their choice or unlocking exclusive experiences. There is even within the email, life cycle email campaigns that send me the right message at the right time. And it's actually personalized to me and to the things that I've bought. And maybe it helps me with my product journey. A great example of that is Indochino. They sell custom suits online. And after you've purchased a suit from them, they keep emailing you and giving you care tips on how to take care of your suit. And how to preserve it and how to treat it the right way and store it the right way. So there's a lot that can be done in terms of elevating the customer experience. And there's a lot of really creative examples out there of brands doing that.
So just this weekend, this is like a weekend in the life of me and my kids, apparently, because I'm telling stories here. But just this weekend, I upgraded my youngest son's kind of toddler bed to a full-size bed. So, you know, you take that thing. We have one of those converted things. So took it apart. We ordered the full-size mattress, the full-size box spring, but we used the same box spring, a very utilitarian product that we did for my other sons, which is this low profile. It comes shipped in a flat box and then you just kind of unhinge it in the middle and it becomes this big thing. So it's packed slowly. So I opened it up and there was this talk about packaging. There was this note in there, hey, thanks for your purchase, blah, blah, blah. And it was wrapped nicely, but it had three cards with it as well. There was one thank you card and then two hello, saying hi type cards. And they were blank on the inside. The note said, hey, we like doing things the right way. We like taking care of people, being good to people. Send these cards out to someone who you're thinking about. Let them know you're thinking about them. And it was just a value prop. It wasn't branded or anything on the cards. They were just hello cards for you to go then do something good. So you hit on the packaging part because you're right. That is the peak experience for that person at a time. They're excited for the package to arrive. They're opening it up and it looks beautiful and things like that. But small things like that are simple ways to kind of stick in a consumer's head. So I really love the example of the packaging there. And just want to throw the anecdote out there as well. You gave some examples, so you kind of jumped my next question a little bit, but I'm going to circle back and make you answer it again because you used the Indochino as an example. Let's look at some common marketing channels and talk about kind of the transactional method with that marketing channel, and then what an emotional tactic would then look like instead. And let's start with email marketing. I just want to go through a couple. Let's start with email marketing. You gave a great Indochino example of nice post-purchase series, product care messages, which I love product care messages. So what would an example of a transactional email marketing message be? And then if you have another example or want to elaborate a little more on the Indochino one, what an emotional tactic would be?
Yep. So this is one that I think that I really like because it's easy, it's so effective, and anyone listening to this podcast right now can do it. So a transactional email tactic. You're having a sale and you send an email to everyone about that sale, right? And you might do some segmentation around who's opened your last email and the last time you sent them and the last time they purchased. But for the most part, you're sending a really big email out to a lot of people about you having a sale. One simple tweak that you can make just to elevate some of your customers' experiences, find your best customers. And you can define that however you like, whether that's how much they've spent with you total or in the past year, how many orders they've placed. Find your best customers and create a segment of them. Maybe it's your top 15% or 10% of customers. And before items go on sale, tell those customers first and let them know that you're telling them first. So say, hey, you're getting this email 4 days before everyone else. We wanted to let you know about this before everyone else because you're a special customer of ours. These items are going on sale and we wanted to let you know first. This is such a simple tactic that anyone can do. It costs you nothing and it elevates your best customers' experiences who will probably generate a disproportionate amount of revenue during sales and even during non-sale times as well.
Awesome. Really good example. I love it. And thanks for giving a separate one other than Indochino. I think more retailers should really do that, by the way. I think you have this subset of customers that are excited about things. And there's often the frustration there with, hey, they're working all day. They get the sale email. They go there and whatever size or product they're looking for is sold out. For me, it doesn't turn me away from the brand, but I always get frustrated because then I want to click on your emails less moving forward. So I think it's a really good example, Steve. I appreciate that. Let's shift to social media marketing. So can you give an example of a transactional social media type message and then what an emotional one might look like?
Yeah, so a transactional social media. I mean, I find a lot of brands are doing social media wrong. You know, they're using it as a broadcast channel as opposed to a conversational channel. And so, you know, the worst examples of broadcasting are, yeah, broadcasting sales or new products or this or that, and just putting it out there and really not engaging or curating an audience at all. That's a transactional way of engaging with customers on social media. A more emotional way of engaging with customers on social media, which is supposed to be social in a conversation, you know, give a shout out to one of your best customers, you know, or someone who's recently joined you as a customer. You know, a lot of people are actually relatively easy to find online these days. So give a shout out and just say thank you, you know, for making a purchase. And, you know, whether you're at mentioning them or just mentioning them by, you know, first name, last initial or something like that, with maybe a location, it's something as simple as that. And it's again, starting a conversation with someone, definitely really appropriate to do if someone's, you know, made their first or second purchase with you to show that they're valued and that, you know, they're being welcomed to this community and to this conversation.
I think to your point, yeah, I think a lot of brands are still not reaching the potential with social because they're not using it as a communication channel. They are using it as a broadcast channel, like you mentioned, which as the demographics get younger, Gen Z and millennials, they want less of that. I'll say the other thing too is, and this is more of a sleuthing post-purchase type thing, but you know, if you ever want to kind of get an insight into who your customers are, right? When they make a purchase with you, they have an email address associated with it. If you search email addresses in social sites, they use that email address to sign up for something, they'll show up in that search result. So I used to advise on this exercise where you plug that email address in, you find out that, hey, we've got Nicole here who purchased XYZ, and you can, you know, you can look through the Twitter feed, the Instagram feed, and see what they're interested in to see how, you know, how this person might be using your product or what matches their lifestyle, and maybe tailor your marketing to some of your actual customers. So it's more due diligence and more kind of sleuthing, for lack of a better term, but it's a really good exercise to use social for more than just like pumping out messages. You can use it for a lot of different things, including customer research. So I like the example there, Steven. I'm going to make the pivot now to loyalty programs. So let me ask you the same question from the loyalty side. So transactional examples of a loyalty program, and then let's make that transition into emotional side for loyalty program. So can you give one there, and then we'll continue down the loyalty path a little bit.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I think with loyalty programs, these are tools, right? These are tools that we can use, and we can use them in transactional ways, or we can use them in ways that build emotional connections with our customers. And I think that one of the reasons why maybe some loyalty programs haven't been doing as well and some are being revamped is because they've been structured in a transactional way, and they're building transactional loyalty and not necessarily the true emotional connection of loyalty, because loyalty is an emotion. So an example of, you know, a transactional loyalty program, simple programs that reward for dollars spent. And, you know, that's about it. And then those dollars spent can be spent on those points that are earned on dollars spent can be spent on a discount. That's a lot of loyalty programs. You know, even the most popular type of loyalty program, which is a stamp card. Think of that. That's buy nine, get one free. There's nothing beyond that. You buy nine products and then you get another product for free. It's so transactional. Just saying it seems transactional. So that's an example of a transactional loyalty program. And I would argue that most loyalty programs actually fall under that category, unfortunately, because they're not doing what they're designed to do, which is build that emotional loyalty with customers. An example of a loyalty program that is an emotional connection with customers that is building those would be loyalty programs that reward for things outside of just purchasing. I've seen so many great examples, writing product reviews, following and sharing on social media. We have some programs that reward for customers on their birthdays. Randomly, they'll just email their customers and say, happy birthday, it's your special day, here's some points. I've seen some programs where they're top tier VIP members, if they're running like a tiered VIP program, those VIP members actually get to vote on the next products and they get to actually be on a tester panel for the products before they're released to everyone else. And they actually use that as customer research. And customers love it because they feel like they're getting something exclusive before everyone else. Great examples of retailers doing things in person as well exist, where companies like, you know, Sephora will close down their stores and they will have private events for their top tier VIB Rouge members. So there's a lot that you can do. And I think exclusivity certainly plays into that. I think rewarding customers for more than just purchases, because customers are more than just purchasers, that goes into it as well. And it's designing experiences, not creating, you know, a transactional model that looks good on a spreadsheet.
So really good examples there. And I think there's also a danger, and maybe you want to give some color or just some personal thought to this as well. I think there's a danger of, you know, a rewards program just being like, okay, you get experiential things and that's really about all you get. So let me give you an example. I buy a fair amount of wine. Let's just leave it there. So the place I buy wine from, they have structured loyalty program. And really the only thing the loyalty program gets me is I can easily just reorder wine for buy online, pick up in store, which is convenient for me. But they do in-person wine tasting events for members of different tiers or these in-store events. And I have yet to attend one. I don't really care to attend one that much, but there are often times that are not convenient for me as well. But they've kind of based their loyalty program for the most part on kind of these in-store wine tastings, which don't happen all the time, but that's the only benefit to it. So, you know, if I need wine and I'm somewhere else, I have no loyalty to this store. They just make it a little more convenient for me to shop and buy online and pick up in store. But there's nothing in that loyalty program where I'm like, oh yeah, I need to add my points to this order because I'm going to get something else for it. So I think there's, you mentioned surprise and delight, or some other things like that. Like, I think you need a little bit from both sides here. You still need a bit of that transactional side, but it can't just be transactional, because I agree with you, the buy nine, get one free. It's like, I always think of that Seinfeld episode where she's got nine subs and she needs one more sub for the free sub. And he's like, you hate their subs, but I'm so close, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have any color to that, where how much balance do you need to strike between the transactional and the emotional or the experiential side for loyalty programs?
So our recommendation is actually to have elements of both, because what you're actually trying to do is shift someone from transactional to emotional. And what appeals to someone just joining a program or just experiencing a brand for the first time or first purchase will tend to skew transactional. That's why, you know, there tends to be discounts on the front end of a customer experience. But, and there's nothing wrong with that if it's not overused as a tactic. The issue is when that is as far as we go with our customer experience and our loyalty program. So we don't want to only have transactional rewards, which are mostly discounts. We want to shift that towards having experiences and towards things that are going above and beyond a discount. So, you know, you want to shift customers to that. And as customers go through your loyalty program and engage more with it, they will shift from a transactional reward to more of those emotional rewards as well. So, you know, in your example of exclusive in-store wine tastings, Why does that need to be in store? Why can't they, you know, maybe send you a sample if you don't aren't able to make it in store? Why don't they make it more convenient for you to try new wines out and they can tell you what to pair things with? You know, why don't they send that to you beforehand? Or, you know, maybe why don't they send that to you before the exclusive in-store wine tasting so you get a chance to see it before other people do as well? You know, they can do something like name a wine after you, right? If they notice that your favorite type of wine is a California Cabernet Sauvignon, maybe they should name a wine after you, right? Or have a collection or something named after you. And even things like having your story and having your content, or maybe having your review of your favorite wine featured by that retailer and you know, put as Greg's pick in front of other customers. So there's a lot that you can do outside of just those transactional rewards where you're getting a discount or you're getting a free product with your purchase.
So I love the example of sending samples of wine, which, I mean, wines, you get these new, you know, these new wine companies that are coming up that kind of do that. They try to get a flavor profile. But I like that example as well. The store does staff picks and top picks and things like that. So taking some of your elite VIP members, which I'm not an elite, I just don't spend that much. But that's a great example as well. So I really love the extra examples. I think for mine, I would call it first pitch Cabernet because I'm pretty confident that Durham Bulls owe me a first pitch at some point during the season. So just throwing out there, Matt, why do you think these retailers with loyalty programs, I mean, we constantly hear about, oh, XYZ is scrapping their rewards program and relaunching. And so many times they relaunch into just another form of transactional program. Why do you think retailers are notoriously slow to adopt this new model of, you know, more experiential or emotional type rewards when it comes to reward programs? You have any theories on that?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult thing to understand, especially online. We are so privileged in having very good data and very good attribution relative to the offline world. It's much easier for us to measure mostly transactional things like ads, digital ads, like, you know, email sends, for example. It's easy for us to measure the effectiveness of a coupon code that we send out. It's difficult to measure the effectiveness of doing a surprise and delight campaign to our best customers. It's easy to measure the effectiveness of naming a product after one of our best customers. So it's a difficult thing to do, but, you know, just like any sort of digital marketing channel or any strategy for that matter, the things that will win the next 5 years are not the status quo right now. And so you need to look at the game that everyone else is playing and have some second order thinking and think about how you can win today and in the next 5 years. I think there's a real challenge right now with getting customers' experiences and getting them to make a purchase. There's the allure of the new out there with so many new competitors appearing. You know, for me to start a store online, especially, and fulfill all of my transactional obligations to a customer in terms of shipping and in terms of fulfillment and finding and sourcing products and having a website that is fast and looks good. All of this can be done for about $30 a month and it can be created within an hour or so. And then I can get customers with ads that I wouldn't have ever had customers, but now I can source some with ads. I can pay for them and I can get orders and I can maybe discount my products more than my competitors because I need new customers. So there's all of these new competitors out there vying for customers' attention, in a lot of cases overspending for that customer attention. And it's got a lot of customers out there, you know, finding these new things a little bit alluring. It's a new thing. I want to experience it. They're promising me a lot. And so I think that, you know, for retailers to win the next 5 years, they need to be doing something different and they need to build a defensive wall around their business, which is customer experience.
Do you think offhand of any brands that either you're personally a loyalty member of or just with your work with Smile that are doing a really good job with loyalty programs and kind of adopting this emotional component to it?
Yeah. I think my favorite is Spikeball. And for those that don't know Spikeball, they're basically creating a new game, which is similar to volleyball, but it's played on a round net and you hit the ball down. So it's a really cool game, really fun if you haven't played it. And it's a newer company. I think they've been out since about 2008 or so. You know, they grew their sales from 7 million to 15 million within 5 years or so. And I like this example because they're doing some very simple things well. And they're a good example of a brand that, you know, without a ton of resources has been able to do this. So that means that, you know, most people listening to this podcast, they can do similar things as well. And they've done a few things. One is that they've ingrained creating conversations and emotional connections with their customers in their company culture, which you can see their mission statement online. So their mission statement includes statements around creating connections with customers. Their values also include a lot of values around creating connections, creating community. And so it's totally ingrained with their company culture. Their CEO, their employees, their business engage with their customers on social media. They publicly post their social media links so that you can engage with them, and they engage with the community. They do a great job of, when they are engaging with those customers on social, bringing in those customer stories. So every single email they send includes a video or a picture of a customer or customers playing spike ball. And sometimes those include how to play and some tips, or just some funny moments that have happened that they've been able to highlight in the past week. They even do things like invest in a spike ball league. So they have a separate site, which is, you know, not promotional at all. The pure purpose of that site is to get people playing spike ball and arranging leagues, and they pay for that too. And you can imagine the experiences that are happening at these spike ball tournaments, where it's a lot of fun. Everyone's playing. You've got all these, you know, you've got people winning and people losing, people learning, and it's just a big party every time people get together for like a weekend tournament, as well as being really competitive too. And then they also have a rewards program as well. And their rewards program does a really good job of rewarding for not just orders. You know, reviews are really important for them. So they're rewarding for reviews. They're giving customers points on their birthdays. They're giving a lot of points for customers engaging with them on social to help them curate that social content and curate those communities across social. They've got a VIP program where customers can level up as they spend more and engage with the brand. They level up and unlock new experiences. I also have a referral program as well, because if you're going to the trouble of creating this community, you want your community to actually grow itself and be an acquisition source of new customers. So they have a referral program as well that's doing very well as people are getting excited and engaging with this new brand and they're feeling this emotional connection. And then they're sharing that with their friends and getting their friends to join this community as well. So I love them because they're a great example of someone doing things well across several strategies under one cohesive umbrella. And they're doing it in ways that are attainable for any retailer that's listening to this podcast to pick up on some of these strategies and do.
Very cool, man. How about one last one before we kind of get to some more entertaining type questions here. How about an emotional reward that maybe you have found to be more effective than others, or that people just really seem to like? Is there one that really stands out above the rest?
Yeah, there's the one that is really easy, and it usually costs next to nothing. If you are doing an influencer marketing strategy where you have, you know, especially micro influencers or kind of those mid-size influencers on Instagram or social media, or YouTube, if you have that strategy and you're making use of that to promote your products, let's ask one of those influencers to do a 30-minute Skype call with one of our customers every month. And you know, your top tier customers, if you want to do a draw out of your top 10% of customers, or maybe everyone who makes a purchase that month and shares it on social media, maybe they get entered into a draw, and they get to actually have a conversation with one of these influencers, which generally people really love, and it will usually cost you next to nothing, and it will easily pay for itself. And someone who has a conversation with someone that they really care about and really respect, they're definitely going to share it on social media too. So it produces great content, produces great experiences, and then you can reuse that content and share that conversation with the rest of your audience afterwards.
I might do that with podcast listeners so someone can have a conversation with me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure you have a ton of listeners that listen to you regularly that would love to have a conversation with you and just talk about some of their favorite strategies they've learned about. And and you know, some of the things they learned about you and in your personal life.
Yeah, I might keep that one to influencers. They might be more entertaining than I would. So, Steve, you gave a lot of really good advice today. You a lot of good things to think about. What did I, if I did anything, did I neglect to either ask you something that you feel is really important for the audience to know, or you just want to throw out there for people?
No, I think the closing summary is, you know, think about your brand. Think about whether you're creating a brand that people love. Think about the brands that you love and the ones that you really care about and experiences that you've had with brands that have really made your day and made you make, you know, tell people about that experience. And then ask yourself if you're creating those kind of experiences for your customers. And if you're not, then chances are you're investing in transactional relationships and you're not further developing those relationships into emotional relationships.
Very cool, man. So I alluded to it at the beginning of the podcast today. You're located in Kitchener, Ontario. We don't need to describe where that is. Everyone has Google Maps, but it's close to Toronto-ish. So what's your favorite restaurant in Kitchener, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to choose from, but my favorite is, it's called Juanita. It's an El Salvadorian restaurant down the street from my office. It seats about 20 people. They have tango lessons on Tuesdays.
Experiential.
Experiential as as well. So you get, you know, the full experience. They also just have some of the best food I've ever tasted. I love South American food. It's definitely, you know, someone's grandma or something back there cooking, because it tastes so good. It's so authentic. And it's this kind of little small hidden gem that I love to go to. But they have the best food and maybe one of the worst websites I've ever seen, but I absolutely love them.
Yeah, it's funny because one of my favorite restaurants here in Durham is also Salvadorian, and their website is also bad. It actually got a new one this past year. It's still bad, but the old one was hideous as well. So there's definitely some sort of correlation there. Steve, what's your favorite thing about what you do?
I love hearing people's stories. I love storytelling and listening to stories. And I find that in retail and with especially the partners that I work with as well, the way that people, you know, start businesses or get involved with businesses is just always so interesting. And I love going to networking events and just hearing, hey, how did you get involved with this company? Or if it's a founder, how did you start this company? And I think you really learn how serendipitous life can be and how, you know, we all take these meandering paths to where we end up in life. Everyone's got a story and they're usually interesting. So I love like just listening to people's stories.
That's cool. Do you have any networking advice for people? Like, do you have a go-to icebreaker you generally use?
Not really. I just walk up and say hi. You know, I'm not too uncomfortable in those kind of social situations. So my icebreaker is, hi, I'm Steve. And just walk up to someone and say hi. And one thing that I've learned in my somewhat limited time, as an entrepreneur, I've learned that people are way more willing to talk to you and give you advice and help you than you'll ever believe. So, just go out there and talk to people. If there's something that you think they can help you with, ask for it, because people love helping you out.
Very cool. Steve, is a hot dog a sandwich?
Well, this is really... This can be up for debate, and we can probably go another 45 minutes on this.
I have before with people.
I think if you look at the purely platonic definition of a sandwich, then I think it would qualify as a sandwich.
All right. Very good. It doesn't matter if the bread is one piece or two. I'm assuming not based on the answer, but just throwing it out there.
I don't think so. I think the definition is, you know, usually a piece of meat or some sort of filling between a piece of bread. So that's why I think that, you know, even wraps can qualify, and quesadillas can even qualify as a sandwich, but that may be controversial.
I'm going to start going quesadilla next. How about the most unusual job you've ever had?
The most unusual job that I've ever had, I actually worked while I was in university. I worked at Lululemon during what was a warehouse sale of their products. So this was a while ago, and this is when Lululemon was this really new hot thing, and you know, especially females loved it, and their products are pretty expensive. So when things go on sale, people tend to go pretty crazy. And so I was a security guard at a Lululemon sale in Hamilton, Ontario for about 2 weeks. It was this massive sale that happened in a big convention center. And I have never been more scared in my life. I was
the exact quality you want from a security guard.
Yeah, it was absolutely wild. It was pandemonium. Clothes are getting thrown all over the place. And my job was to stand in front of the door where a new racks of clothes, which would come out. And the new racks of clothes were really just the old clothes that had been strewn about and left around. They were re-racked onto a rack and brought back out. But these were the new clothes. So when they got brought out, these people were going crazy, pulling, you know, clothes off. And, you know, the hot item was purses. So everyone was trying to get inside info on when the purses were coming back out. And I was both threatened and propositioned multiple times per hour. It was really scary.
That is awesome. It's awesome that we're talking. So nothing happened to you, obviously, but that's a great story.
I've had a lot of good therapy that's helped out with it.
Very good. If you were going karaoke tonight, what's your go-to karaoke song?
Hotel California.
Yeah, it's popular.
I love that song. It's, you know, when I was younger, it was one of the first songs where I learned about metaphors and how the song isn't necessarily the words. I've always really loved that song.
Awesome, man. And one more for you before we get you out of here. I am going to set a timer for you. I want you to name as many fish as you can in 15 seconds. You ready?
Okay.
Go. Yep.
Perch, smallmouth bass, largemouth bass, pickerel, trout, salmon, tuna, shark. There's ahi tuna, which is yellowfin tuna. There are mackerel.
Time's up. I'll give you mackerel, though. So that'll count you in the 10. Did you know this was coming?
I actually had no idea that it was coming.
Okay.
But I do love fishing.
All right. You don't listen to the podcast then. I change it from time to time. You're good. What's your favorite fishing spot up there?
My favorite fishing. So every year I do a week long trip somewhere in the remote Canadian wilderness where there's no cell phone service. And last year I did a trip where, the only way to get to this place, it's called Wabakimi. It's about 300 kilometers north of a place called Thunder Bay. And so the only way to get to this place, is to either take a train in that cuts through the area or to fly in. And so I took a train in. You tell the train to stop, you get off the train. And then you go camping and canoeing and fishing for a week. And, this place was so remote. I didn't see a single soul, other than the people that I was with. And, one day when we had run out of breakfast food, I went out fishing and I caught 7 pickerel, which are called walleye in America. So I caught 7 walleye, which is a pretty good fish to eat. So that's my favorite fishing spot of all time because it's probably one of the few places I can actually catch a fish.
That's great. Full of great stories, Steve. So I love it. Steve, any questions for me today?
No, just more of a thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for including us on this. You know, you're a really smart guy, especially when it comes to anything around digital marketing and e-commerce strategy. So I appreciate you having us on.
I appreciate those kind words. Obviously, your contact info is going to be in the episode description. If people do want to reach out, Steve, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you guys?
Yep. If you want to get in touch with me directly, best way for me is actually Twitter. So I'm at Steve Deckert. If you want to get in touch with Smile, smile.io, our website, and we're also available on all of the social channels too.
Steve Deckert, everyone, co-founder of Smile.io. Thanks for your time, Steve. To those listening, especially our listener of the week, Kevin from Buffalo, go Buffalo. If you want to be the listener of the week, let me know you've tuned in. And if you're interested in telling your e-commerce story, I'd love to hear from you. Hope you enjoyed the episode, everyone. Until next time, have a great day and be kind to one another.